So a big warm ovation for him.
Are we good to go? Hello. I don't generally get to use the doctor title out in the wild, so I'm quite pleased about that. So I'm really happy to be here with some of our MA poets to show off what's happening above in the college, because sometimes we can be a little bit detached up on campus. And before, if, in case I forget to say, I just want to say thanks to O'Vale and Paul for having us. Thanks to all you. This is just in case I forget at the end to do the thank yous, I'll do them now. So we've a variety of poets tonight who are going to show off a few different skills that they have and a lot of different voices. And we're going to start with Ben Donnellan. Ben Donnellan is a poet from Cork. Woo, Cork. Currently on the master's program, his work attempts to draw on the inherent mythology present in the lives of the individual, framing everyday life, its struggles, its pleasures in an epic context. Welcome, Ben.
Oh, hello. It's a lot more of you when you're standing up here. I've just got two poems for you today. The first one, if I could, I'd like to dedicate this to my father and his mother, if I could. So this is a poem I've written called The Gardener's Friend. It's January, and he's flitting between the root trunks of the tree ferns in our garden, his detective's eye carefully considering the silvered spines of last year's fronds. Their broad leaves worn by winter, their feathered edges bronzed and bitten, brownish and brittle like tarnished blades. He cuts them at the base of the stem, lets the rusted fan-like foliage flit to the earth, whirling in the midwinter wind. Some russet insulation for the nest he'll share with his friend. My father's robin redbreast, perched on the ivy-smothered wall, stewards his preparations, its little russet head tilted as it eyes his every move. A vigilant foreman, diligent and discerning, only the best of his cuttings will do. We inherited the bird in my grandmother's passing, and I think sometimes that's who he sees too, when it comes whirring round his ankles in the garden, winging between each shovel stroke and singing as it had for her God on the cross, when its red breast was bloodied and consecrated, my father's bird stained with her sacred heart. Though my own faith died some years ago, I too find a comfort in the bird, not in its song, but in its labour, where I see my father's work. The straight line flight between the tree ferns, steady and direct, the deliberate gait along the stepping stones, his eyes narrowed and obsessed. And it's not hard for me to imagine him pluck the barbs from a crown of thorns, for his sanctuary is found in his labour, nothing else and nothing more. And the second one, I'd also like to make the dedication, if I can, to my wonderful partner, Sarah, standing right in front of me. So if she bolts for the door, somebody stop her. And this is a poem I wrote called Postcards from Amsterdam. At the Waterloo Pline Market, on a bend in the River Amstel, where the sun, still low in its rise, lights a box of old postcards, like an ingot of tarnished gold. I am lost in the reflection of their pages, yellowed by the flow of time and the inevitable, browned at the edges, burned by the oils of every hand that ever handled them, every thumb that ever thumbed its way through each tacky slip, as you do, your fingers prying cardstock from memory. And they are like memories, like leaves shed from the bough, raked and gathered into bundles, a hoard to be cherished, though spent, deficient. And I hear them, a hushed crowd wilted, weeping in a language I do not speak, but understand. The near soundless expressions of the idealistic and idolized, the language of senescence, learned in the year we've spent apart. In the 3,000 miles between Elysium and Earth, Connolly Road and Union Drive. But as January's wind wraps my scarf around your red-crowned ears and whips the damp, earthy scent of mould from moth-torn clothes upriver to my wrinkled nose, you catch that distance in my eyes. Their glimmer gone to memory, gone numb, gone silent and desperate, gone back to the trail, to Shannon and the slope of the stairs before the departure gate, to the curtain of glass that would divide our lives, to the yielding air before the last hesitant turn, until you squeeze my hand three times to say I love you, and that surely this must all be some kind of mail fraud. And in your laugh, I hear you've learned the language too. So I squeeze back, feeling the strain of my joints now ossified in the cold. And I think of the gloves in my coat pocket and of the postcards cast as a sturdy brick of gold. And I know I'll choose to brave the winds of winter, because no wool could bring the warmth of your thumb, thumbing that tune on my purple knuckles. Your hand in mine, always warm when I look back.
Wow, wasn't that gorgeous? I feel like we've all just had this emotional experience together. And I expect the exact same emotional experience tomorrow in class. Okay, so that was a great start. Thanks, Ben. That was gorgeous. Next up is Connor Daly, who's down the back there, and will make his way towards us. So, Connor is a poet and short fiction writer, again from Cork. Woo! He is of the parish of UCC, having completed an English and German degree before joining us on the MA in Creative Writing. His work focuses on people, place, and capturing the mundane, and it's previously appeared in Motley. Welcome, Connor.
I just have three short poems for you today. And the first one is called Bioluminescence. Arriving at the shore, feeling like less, but hoping to find more within yourself and in the wide expanses of the West, the place where we send our institutionalized or those who should be such, to see if the wild bones of the landscape can tame the landscape within, if the heather and the headland can liven up the rotting dreams floating around your head like seafoam. The city seems so far away, when the sun stays out later than the local children, and the stars smatter the sky in abundance, like bioluminescence of the heavens. After the second one, you will notice a trend. This one is called Stone Walls. The various household appliances still working to adjust to this new time zone. The extra hour in the morning enveloping the evening into the kind of darkness that invites your eyes to question. The day is now far beyond uneven, our emotions no longer equinoctial either. My mind like coastal farmland in Galway, full of green but speckled with stone walls, maroon, and a distinctly assured sensibility. For in this land of that which always defies captivity, you can be the same. Straying from boundaries and stone walls and heading to the coast instead, where your mind, like the seaweed, is constantly floating between staying just above the surface and drowning. Like the spirit of those who live here, you find yourself somewhere between battered and becoming, refusing to be knotted, instead learning to break ties among high tides and rolling thunder skies. And this last one is called Fleeting. The days have stretched out since then, but stretched thin, never enough to go round. Not like the cyclical days back in West Cork, the light and dark reflecting off the water at equal glimmering intervals, Our fleeting friendships kindled under goalposts and streetlights. Our bonds briefly broken over romance and happenstance. Mending it all the same day, over a 99, an hour supine. The following sunrise arriving with boundless intent, crisp and fresh. Inviting, imploring that we would not 1 second more waste. As we sit around this mahogany table, recounting summer tales, we drink it all in again in a heartbeat, not wasting a single drop.
Gonna have to, it doesn't need to go down that low. I'm short, but I'm not that short. Come on now. Okay, next up we have the most unique of individuals and specimens. We have the mixture in Mary Dunn of an inter-county footballer and a poet. Woo! Representing Westmeath, but we won't hold it against her. Mary Dunn has a degree in international degree in English and French. What does that mean? From the University of Galway. Currently inside in the Masters with us, and her work has been published in Rope's Literary Journal, and she is both a poet and a fiction writer. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you so much. So the first poem is called All Before 12 PM. I scattered slivers of my soul to a new therapist, paced 14 laps of Centra on Grand Parade, not ready to finish my phone call with my friend, but craving the comfort that the deli provides. I got caught in the middle of a funeral procession. The flowers spelled sister. When I have excelled the art of repression, is it better to leave it buried below 6 layers of concrete, a low constant hum of nausea, a smile as a form of self-defense, or give in to the potential that I might jackhammer cracks, vomit tears, get angry? My friend stayed on the phone with me until 9:30 and told me that it's better if I knock on the door now, but they won't be upset if I'm late because I need another minute. She answered the second I skeeted down the stairs, eyes lowered, hood up, arms and fingers stretched into straight lines, trying to force the cringe to waterfall off me. She stayed until I was ready to face the day on my own terms. She told me she had set an alarm to make sure she would be awake as I walked there. I'd never seen a funeral procession in a town before. Back home, people know when they are on. They are either attending or know to go the long way around. I scrambled to see which lane of traffic had the green light, if I could scurry across the road despite the red man, head down, careful not to show off that I was living a normal day, that my life hadn't been interrupted by loss. I was careful not to look at them, not to make their grief public, but the flowers spelled sister, and that made it personal. And my day had been far from normal. I was trying to run from another room, another building that I will sit in once a week, every week for who knows how many weeks, and try to speak it all away. My day had been far from normal. This day and every single day since, disrupted by the actions of another, the grief of no longer having a body to call home, nor a bed to feel safe in, nor a box to lay in, bury and let rest. I will try to make my grief public because it hurts too much to keep private, tucked away from the light, only for me to see. I will try to jackhammer cracks, vomit tears, get angry, but I have become so numb, I have no idea how. Thank you. So the second one is called Words I Will Never Speak to My Twin, and it's not half as depressing. We spent our childhood day in, day out, hour after hour, each waking and sleeping minute together. Before we knew how to speak, we spoke our own language. sat on stools either side of the stove. We driveled on for hours. Mam said she would stop and stare in disbelief, unsure if we were 2 or 80. I was the escape artist, my bigger head and hands the defining features to tell us apart. I climbed out of my crib into yours, gave you a boost and followed you down the stairs. Mam taught us to bump, bump, bump down on our bums. Telling us to wait for her was a losing battle. One half of time spent giggling, spilled milk sprinkled in cornflakes, spat out on the kitchen table in bursts of laughter. Shoulders shaking silently at mass despite impending lectures in the car. Sometimes days spent in hideouts we made in the fields, only food drawing us back inside. The other half spent fighting, spilled blood from contact harder than intended, shoulder shoved into the door's glass window, shards of glass still clinging to the metal frame. But forgiveness came and still comes easy. An apology rarely needed, making each other laugh is our extension of the olive branch. Now you stand a forehead above me. I can count the times in a year that I see you on my hands, and I miss you, us, half of myself. And I wonder, is it my fate to feel lonely because I will never be as close to someone as we were when we grew and came into this world together.
I feel kind of disenfranchised that I didn't never had a twin. After hearing that. So now we're on to the international portion of the event, and I'm going to introduce Noel Reeling. Noel is a writer from St. Paul, Minnesota, currently in Cork, obviously, studying for an MA in creative writing with the rest of them, and writing both poetry and prose with a very, very crisp focus on the natural world. Welcome, Noel.
Hello. This first one is called Ode to a Calabaza Squash. You arrive to me, a rambunctious sprout traded for a handful of hyacinths. Cradled in mounded earth with 6 iron pellets, your curious fingers erupt. Discovering everywhere the hard feel of cinder block and concrete, I turn you around. Your hermaphroditic nature yields 2 gifts, and I dip my fingers into your waiting flowers, male and female both. I pick the males as they open, batter and fry them with cheese. The female flowers I cultivate longer. It's not until their ovaries bulge into striated green baseballs that they will meet the stove. My pink hands guide you through the garden's maze. Carefully now, your prickling stems resist movement like an old rubber hose. Your final gift lies in a bed of browning reeds, warped green rind wrapping tangerine flesh. As you wither, I hope it brings comfort to say, I devoured every part of you. This next one is called Salamander. Elemental fire flicks in the slick of your skin, blended black and blue, spotted and soiled with damp, sapphire whirlpools drowning in darkening hues, weighted with water and whiskey to burn it with, delirious light cascades across your border, lights up the paper, turns out the salamanders. And this is a longer one here. It's called The Horde of Valerie the Dragon. Now that you're dead, your son has a 20-yard dumpster parked in the driveway. He wants to sell your house. But Valerie, this house is still buried beneath you, your belongings heaving like the sea in great crests above the furniture. No surface bare besides the sacred plains of the faux leather easy chair beside the bay windows. I've long navigated the troughs where soiled carpet is exposed, checkered with piss trails from some long dead pet. I told him I would help clean the place out, and so I have, working my way from kitchen to living room to office to bedroom. I use these words lightly. You haven't slept in that bedroom in years. This vortex of clutter, this black hole of memories, that rotting mattress finally unearthed between half a ton of waste. I pry open the closet door and pull out 7 baggies of pink aquarium gravel, a paper bag stuffed with fast food wrappers, half a dozen reams of printer paper, 3 boxes of votive candles, an unopened pair of compression socks, a prayer card from your husband's funeral, a weathered bunch of fake marigolds, 4 identical whale statuettes from the Shedd Aquarium gift shop, a cat toy, a pack of Christmas-themed bath bombs, loose golf tees, a basket of seashells, a Y2K t-shirt, 37 classical music CDs, a cross-stitched kitten on a white napkin, an empty Cabbage Patch doll box, a framed photo of Oscar's high school graduation, a crushed roll of paper towels, a stack of piano lesson books, a tube of glass ornaments, a shoebox of greeting cards, a wicker basket of canned fish, a pink baby onesie, a painted wooden giraffe, a tangled nest, a brittle, faded newspaper, and at last, reaching into the exposed crater, my fingers brushed against something warm, a massive egg, tea-stained brown and gritty like old paint. I lift it out and hold it in my lap, and through my jeans I can feel it thrumming against the shell. A heartbeat, faint but steady.
Okay, I think we have a competition for the bog down in the valley. So next up we have Sam Wingfield Karpowitz, from Alexandria, Virginia, who's also lived in Minnesota and Northern California before arriving in Cork. Sam's poems are tender and delicate to the point that you nearly wait for them to fracture while he's reading them. So let's just welcome Sam and see what happens.
Thank you. Ben was definitely right. There are a lot of people when you stand here. Thank you all for having us. This first poem that I'm going to read is called Sewing. Sewing. Amber winter light slopes into the nook. The wood stove flames twitch, blur, and vanish like an oriole from a Douglas fir. Fishnet moss quivers. Pre-dusk swallows flit and feed as the soup warms. You slant there, loosely, in the green silk robe my mother gave you, tied at the waist, sewing ink prints into cream dresses, your tongue focusing against your lower lip, the light slit sounds of thread through muslin almost perceptible. Your method is to etch trees and creatures in copper plates, bathe them in acid, print them on cloth, suture in them thin sensations of color like ligaments, tissue. Most nights it becomes like this, fog, a low round moon. Cherry wood smoke ascends easily from the flue, and its ashy scent curls back inside the slit window. You pause, head tilted to inspect the hand's work. Pull a stream of hair behind your ear. Resume. I'm drafting casually. Art seems to be the subject, its order and lapse, its sense of seeing and seen. But there is something more in the looping pierce of needle, thread, and fabric, like poetry, a rhythmic entering, breath and re-entering, not so much a way of witness as a way within it. Thank you. The second poem is called Smile, Small Teeth. Fuchsias from the rain-rivered window, slim red petals, violet torsos, tendrils like ballet legs, dangling. Behind them, the children chase a soccer ball in the garden. They know the English words, hello and goodbye, and they smile small teeth when they open doors for me in the red floored halls. I don't know what they have or have not seen. It is autumn. The rain drips from the fuchsias, from the children's dark hair. It is almost possible that this will be what they take. Brief reigns, the golden garden, soccer, hello, goodbye, fuchsias. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to invite Sean Noonan up from the back. If you want to make your way forward. Sean, as he slowly makes his way here, I'll introduce him. Sean writes poetry with an outdoor slant. He writes the poetry indoors sometimes as well. Professionally and personally, he's fascinated by nature and its power to heal. In addition, he sees it as a form of personal adventure. And when he's not outdoors, poetry offers him an outlet for exploration through words, images, and stories. Here comes Sean.
Hey there, everyone. Thanks very much for having me. And just thanks for this great opportunity. In the words of a famous Corkman, if anyone doesn't get the joke. I just have three poems for you for this evening. First one is St. Finbar and the Wren. The king is calling, calling out to me. I wander into his garden to see him in his tree. Perched atop a bramble, he belts his bullets of sound upward to the celestial winter sun. Overlord of St. Finbar's ground. Catching my eye, he dashes away at a flighty, flitting run to the heart of the cathedral's mindful maze. Diligently I follow to tread the gravel track, wondering what an urban pilgrim might learn on his mundane morning commute. Each step becomes a crinkle through rough gravel and worry left behind. First I twist right, then to the left. My gaze is always down. Retracing old paths, contemplating the new, I begin to ponder the centre and who will greet me there, Finbar or the bird. Arriving, I find myself alone, remembering the rumbling of cars in a grumbling city, rousing from slumbering sleep. Thank you. This next one is called Knepping. I think that's how you pronounce the word. If anyone knows, feel free to let me know. It's about a walk I went on in Wexford. They have a sensory walk where you walk barefoot in the river. It's really beautiful. And apparently it's called Knepping. A river walk in Wexford. Dearest Tintern, where this was done. Alone before Mother Nature, we tread the sensory floor. He that went before me hurt in ways he hardly knew, while I that followed loyally did not yet know her power. Barefoot we went on rounded stones, across rough mulch and timber cross sections, until painfully we transitioned to the river. Cold needles stabbed, speech ripped away. The rasping call of bickering jays replaced the words we'd spoke, while the pungent tang of wild garlic overbrimming on the bank hung heavily in the nose. Emerging from the water, we shared a knowing grin before returning round once again to see if we'd found a cure. And my final poem is Planting. With our druid's toolkit, we made straight for the treeless green. Four potted oaks, two shovels, a pickaxe and a barrow. Breaking the sod, we turned the loam, prying, making our holes. James, my neighbour, took the pick like a hazel wand of old, and reverentially swinging, clattered loose the rocky depths. Then scooping with the shovel, I dug us toward a sacred earthen core. Lifting the pots, We shook free my four oaks from their choking plastic prisons before burying them alive beneath churned up wormy soil to find freedom in their new home. A minute pagan offering in a modern synthetic world. Though the sun was falling and light fading, we were light of foot, druids upon the earth, bringing new life into nature, growing toward wisdom. Wiping the brow, we whispered hopes to the young oaks that they might grow tall, offering advice once matured. Archaic druids' words, spoken to thick evening air, to be held by the night and remembered by the earth in a world never far from breaking. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we're coming to the end of our session, which I'm now going to call Poets in the Wild. And thank you for the context on that one, because myself and Sean were sitting in the office today trying to figure out how to pronounce it. And I don't think we came to a conclusion until just there. So thank you for that. So finally this evening, I am going to introduce poet Robin Kelly. Robin is a poet and fiction writer studying with us up in UCC. Her pieces predominantly focus on themes of isolation, grief, and self-reflection. Their work has been featured in New World Order, Motley Magazine, and The Caveat Lector. Can I introduce and greet Robin?
Thank you. Oh, wow, there's a lot of people. Thank you very much. You guys are an incredibly tough act to follow. I am so lucky to be with so many talented people for this course. And I will do my best. But you guys are it. Thank you so much. I have two poems for you this evening. The first one is called The Descent of the Twin Flame Sun, and it is for my dear friend Leah, who is studying or is teaching in Japan. Drunk on sunlight and cheap wine, we are glowing on that balcony of your dad's IKEA catalog apartment. I began to slur my words. Creasing laughter escaped your slightly wet mouth. I have fought and lost for friends over school's outcast years, hypothesis of something promising not yet proven. When I met you, on the first day of college, I saw you, the sun as the center of the universe, Aristarchus of Samos's first discovery. It pains me to think of you, alone, in that almost house, within the four walls never really called home. I promised to help you bring the place to life when the night crept in. Filling it with incense that settled into ghost lakes, we didn't wade through, we exploded. Sending the smoke into dizzying tendrils that danced with us. Each throw of our limbs pushed clouds upwards till the room was a fragrant haze. Despite the snowballing of time, the speakers roared our favorite songs. They promised on those nights, we were young and sweet, only 17. You didn't care that my voice was shit because we screamed it together. We meant it. We burst at the seams until red and sleepy, the energy tipped and spilled from us. Then we collapsed into the dark to talk about the future. Our plans to go to that festival somewhere in Europe, I can't remember where, just that you said it's crazy. Or how I was falling in love again. I needed your help finding the words. Unapologetically loud and unfiltered, I cherish all of our radiant nonsense. With all that talk, you'd think I'd have realized that one day you'd be gone, a 5,827 miles from here kind of gone. In your new home, you will have 10 more minutes day glow, distracting from an overshadowing time difference. You will travel 9 hours into the future without scientific breakthroughs. But then they were only words, though soon enough they'd become as real as the earliest inscriptions of solar eclipses. The day you left, you took every sigh, hum, and snore, every repeated phrase and ism to teach English to strangers' children. With each day that passes, you learn to dream in a language of honorifics I cannot understand. My girlish laugh, our best kept secrets, went with you, neatly folded in a suitcase. I hope one day you'll come back and they will come with you. Thank you very much. This next one is called A Fox Named Omen, and I would like to dedicate this to my granddad. In the creeping truffle dusk, I saw the silhouette of a frail creature. His eyes said what his body couldn't. I've been waiting, child. I felt sorry to have kept him there, but I had things still needing to be done. Goodbyes yet to give, I didn't know would be my last, and bedtime stories to be handed down from firm hands to mine. But I can see his patience is thin, like the fur clumped over his spine, eyes sunken deep within his skull, blinking with the oozing light of evening sun. The ears stiffen with the sound of the nearby city, nose lifted to the sky, feeling the wind curl as if to sense time by a shift in the air. I know this creature can control the sky, but no inevitable fate can be prevented. Time is carried by the wind, grown in the soil, gifted to newborn lambs in the spring. I know he has followed me here, to make me feel what I cannot yet see. But before I return, home to kiss a cheek for the last time, I see the sun. It has chased us to this moment of suspended time, here to show us the end has come. In a moment's flicker, it sinks over the hills, awaiting to bring light to new life. The fleeting blood-orange splash catches the glint of the animal's coat. A burning, sprawling red glows from his body. When I retreat to the present, in the form of a pebble-dashed cul-de-sac house, the light has been drained and bottled from the front room. I hear the crackle of your cherished gramophone. It's playing a song written long before I was born. You are content with a cup of tea at the head of the table. I pull out a chair and you ask about my day. What did you see, Paddle? A fox, I say.